represent the plaintiff and appellant in this matter, Mr. Alan Barcelona. And in this case, we're actually asking this court to overturn the district court's decision granting summary judgment against Mr. Barcelona with respect to allegations of violations of his constitutional and statutory rights regarding an administrative investigation under the Public Safety Officers Procedural Bill of Rights Act. Now, the court has asked us to address a couple of other issues that I would like to get to first. The first issue being whether Mr. Barcelona lacks standing to assert claims for injunctive and declaratory relief under the United States Supreme Court case of the City of Los Angeles v. Lyons, or alternatively, whether his claims are moot. With respect to the standing issue, the problem in Lyons was two things. One, the illegal nature of the plaintiff's conduct that led to the allegations of unconstitutional action in the first place, and then the speculative nature of what had to happen down the road to have those allegedly unconstitutional actions happen again. The issue turned on the ability
to control.
Yes, there's a whole case.
Yes, and the speculation was that he would be rearrested and have the same thing happen again.
Right, and the presumption is that a citizen should not violate the law, and if you don't violate the law, you don't have to be subjected to the possibility.
I think that that's really the first alliance. The first alliance is you don't have standing when the injury in the future is totally speculative, and I don't understand how your client isn't in exactly the same position, because he would have to have another administrative process for at least alleged violation in which he's asking for a lawyer that gets disqualified for being a witness. Why is that likely enough to be more or less speculative than Lyons?
Well, there's two issues with Mr. Barcelona's investigation. One, that he was denied the representative of his choice because Mr. Clark was designated after the fact as a witness in the investigation. Also, that he was precluded from speaking about the investigation.
But either of those, I mean, the only way that this will happen again is if he has another alleged violation, another hearing. Why do we think that that will happen?
That will happen because the department has, well, for two reasons. One, because the department has a policy of preventing subjects of investigations from being represented by witnesses.
And the City of Los Angeles had a policy of chokeholds. That was what was at issue in Lyons.
But they had a policy of not being able to use chokeholds without provocation. And so the question was,
okay, well, whatever the policy was, there was a policy. And the idea was, it's too speculative that you'll ever run up against this policy. So why is it less speculative that your client will run up against the policy? The fact that there's a policy is the same.
Because he can't avoid the potential for future injury just by avoiding violating the law. And if I can point
out, he never has another hearing about a discipline thing. He never will have to bump up against this policy.
That is correct, Your Honor, except that that's not the standard for standing, so to speak. And if I can point the court's attention to Hodges v. Durgan versus De La Vina, which came out of this court in 1999, 199 F 3rd 1037, it was uncontested that the plaintiff engaged in entirely innocent conduct, and there the Border Patrol were routinely stopping motorists near the border without reasonable suspicion. So in order to avoid injury, those plaintiffs would have had to not drive near the border. Now, similarly,
and there was found no standing, right?
Oh, no standing. There was found standing, but there was found that injunctive relief did not be
issued. No standing for injunctive relief, and your client is seeking injunctive relief, so it seems like that case goes against you.
Well, we disagree because Mr. Barcelona cannot keep himself out of harm's way. And I'm going to point the court's attention to actually what is a district court decision out of the Southern District of Ohio, which I know is not binding and doesn't serve as precedential, but it is directly on point with the situation that we have here. The irony is the plaintiff was an inmate rather than law enforcement, which is what we're dealing with. The inmate was faced with a rules violation, and he tried to call a witness for his disciplinary hearing. And the institution told him that that witness would not be credible, so that witness could not testify at his disciplinary hearing.
The court there said that there's a high chance that plaintiff will again suffer the same injury. Maybe that plaintiff was, I don't know the facts of exactly how that prison worked, but maybe prisoners had disciplinary hearings every week in that prison or something.
And the court found that there was a high chance that he would suffer the same injury because of this unwritten policy that allowed the institution to make a determination of whether or not the inmate could request the witness, but then the institution could decide whether or not the witness could actually be called. Now, the court pointed to the fact that the correctional officers have the discretion to accuse inmates of rules violations, which will put them before the disciplinary board. And that's the exact same situation we have, whether or not the inmate actually did anything wrong. And we have the exact same situation here, ironically again, on the other side of the spectrum with law enforcement. Penal Code Section 148 gives citizens the right to make complaints of misconduct against the police, whether they're valid or not, whether they're justifiable or not. Penal Code Section 832.5 requires the department to have a procedure to investigate those complaints. So, due to no wrongdoing of Mr. Barcelona's own, he can very well be subject again to the same sort of investigation. He can be prohibited from using his own union counsel as his representative, and he can be silenced as to talking about the circumstances not only of the investigation, but whatever is raised in the interview, which can involve union matters, matters that involve the terms and conditions of employment. He can be silenced, as he was in the situation, from consulting with privileged sources.
So, you may or may not convince us, but let's say you convince us he has standing. Doesn't he need to show that this is a matter of public concern in order to win on this claim? And didn't he, in fact, say it would be improper to talk about the subject of any of this? And why doesn't that mean he's waived any ability to show that this was a matter of public concern?
Yes, Your Honor. So there's two elements with respect to the Pickering test. There's two types of cases out there, and the more common ones are the retaliation cases, which are looking at the content of speech actually made. Then it's easy to say, well, did that involve a matter of public concern or did it not? Here we have what is more characteristically a prior restraint, and that raises the question of, could the speech being restrained involve a matter of public concern? And yes, there were certain elements of the investigation at issue that Mr. Barcelona wanted to keep private, but there were certain elements of the investigation that the underlying allegations arose during a meeting that involved the discussion of many things that were then had to be kept confidential.
It's part of his affirmative burden in making a First Amendment case to show that he gets the heightened standard by having a matter of public concern, and I think he said nothing to tell us why this is a matter of public concern.
It is the chilling effect of the prior restraint on speech that presumptively makes it a constitutional issue and presumptively can include issues of public concern. I think when it's a prior restraint, you can't just affirmatively say, no, it's not going to involve issues of public concern.
But did you argue in the district court that this is a prior constraint that's keeping me from talking about matters of public concern?
We did not use the term prior restraint, Your Honor.
Or public concern. Did you talk about Pickering?
No, we did not talk about Pickering. Well, we cited Pickering for the proposition that the government bears a heavy burden that in order to restrict speech, they have to show legitimate justification for it. But no, not for the...
How about in our court? Did you argue in our court about whether this is public concern?
No, Your Honor. It was actually not raised in either court, either by us or by the state or by the district judge. I don't think that necessarily compels the conclusion that the issue has been waived. And the summary judgment is appropriate. This may be more of a matter where the record needs to be, or the case needs to be more developed in the district court by a reversal of summary judgment and continuing on to the merits of the case, where that question can be more definitively answered based on a more developed record than what was at issue for the summary judgment motions. But if I can draw your attention very briefly to the Moonen versus Tice case that very recently came out of this court on August 22nd, it was with respect to the prior restraints on speech. It was a very similar situation.
But it was very clear in that case that there was a matter of public concern, right?
It certainly had a better developed record, Your Honor. But it was the same sort of speculative nature about the possibility when the department is saying, you cannot speak about this at all, a blanket prohibition. It covers such a broad range of topics that could arise that, as this court found in Moonen, It can involve issues of public concern. And with Mr. Barcelona, in this case, affected union issues. And not being able to discuss even the investigation, the existence of the investigation, limited his ability to effectively function as the union president. It had to do with, you know, securing funds for representation, moving forward with issues. If the complainant was to raise the case in the media or publicly, Mr. Barcelona would not have been able to respond because he had been muzzled by this prior restraint. And that impacts the union and impacts all the members of the union. And this case has found that the relationship between the union and, in that case, the city case, so the city officials, has been held to be a matter of public concern. And that's McKinley versus the city of Eloy. And it's the same situation that we have here. Mr. Barcelona, as the union president, had significant issues involved in this administrative investigation that he was muzzled from speaking about. And you know what? I have 4 minutes left, but I'd like to reserve for rebuttal, please.
Good morning. Kristen Daly on behalf of the California Department of Justice, Larry Wallace, Nathan Duvalli, Brent Orrick, and Catherine Coudier. First, with regard to the City of L.A., the Lyons case, it is very similar, as I think just was raised with the Appellant's counsel. This situation is not likely to recur unless Mr. Barcelona is again alleged of engaging in misconduct that is witnessed by the person who he wants to be his representative.
So her response to that was that maybe at least the claim about being muzzled and speaking about the issue, so not the who the representative is, but the other claim that's about he couldn't talk about the investigation, that that might be less, like, more likely to recur.
He certainly could be alleged of engaging in misconduct again, just as Mr. Lyons could have been accused of a crime again. And in that case, the fact wasn't that he was convicted of a particular crime, but he could, or that he would be convicted again, just the fact that he could be arrested again. I don't think that there's any greater probability that Mr. Barcelona is going to be accused of wrongdoing again than Mr. Lyons is going to be arrested for some violation again. I just don't think it's any more likely.
What is the policy? So it seemed like at one time he was told he couldn't speak to anyone about the investigation, and somewhere else it seems like he was told he couldn't speak to anyone at DOJ about the investigation.
There is not a written policy. What my understanding of what the admonishment that is given to witnesses and subjects is that they are not to talk to any department employee or anybody connected to the investigation. It is in the record that Mr. Barcelona didn't understand what the administrative admonishment was. He did not understand that he couldn't speak to his wife about this, or his doctor about this, or his clergyman about this. I think that's a red herring.
If you have a prior restraint, is there any burden on the plaintiff to show that what they would have said is a public concern? It seems like the record's sort of silent about if I hadn't been restrained, what I would have talked about would have been this, as opposed to something that was within the office that would not be protected, but it was a private citizen or whatever you want to say. But it's not anything like that.
No, there is no evidence in the record about what Mr. Barcelona was prevented from talking about that was of a public concern. No, I think in the Gibson v. Department of Justice case, they applied a public concern element to a prior restraint case. And in that case, they found that you can reasonably regulate the speech particularly when there's no public concern. I think it really comes down to a balancing, and I think it's almost the same analysis that we argued and that was actually used below on a time, place, and manner restriction. Was it reasonable? And I think
this wasn't, I don't understand how you could have litigated. This is a time, place, and manner. It's a content-based, he can't talk about the investigation. It's not a content-neutral time, place, and manner. So that was quite confusing to me.
It's very narrow. When appellant says that they can't talk about issues that relate to the meeting where this issue arose with their union business, that is not the case. That is not what the admonishment stated. It was about the facts of the investigation, and it's specific.
And that's a content-based restriction, so time, place, and manner case law seems to have no bearing on this at all.
I think that it's so narrow in terms of what.
So you may be able to defend it.
The content is
justified substance for this. I mean, but it's not. I don't understand. All the time, place, and manner cases say can be content-based. And this is plainly content-based. It's telling him he can't talk about a certain subject. It may be in a certain, he may go for a certain period of time.
Or he can't talk about the
core of an issue about this subject. That's content-based.
I think the Gaines case is applicable here. That's a Central District, California case. And they found that the admonishment, the same admonishment, did not violate the First Amendment.
Okay, so that might be on the merits, but not because it was a time, place, and manner restriction? I don't remember the reasoning of that case.
Well, they found that there was no compelling interest.
Because it had to be viewed as a content-based restriction, and then maybe you pass strict scrutiny, or maybe you have some lower level of scrutiny because it's not under Pickering public interest. But the idea that it's just time, place, and manner, like you can talk about it outside but not inside, is like almost frivolous. It seems I don't quite understand how that was what the state, or the, yeah, the state, how they litigated this.
All I can say is that's how it was litigated, and that's what was ruled by the district court. I would also say, though, that in terms of the public concern issue not being developed below, it certainly wasn't. And again, there's been no evidence that Mr. Barcelona was restricted from speaking about any union business. The fact of a particular threat made by him against a citizen does not encompass union business. And this is the public concern issue is one that can be decided as a matter of law. You know, going to the merits then of the case, I think one of Mr. Barcelona's issues with the development of the case in the lower court was that there was no evidence that the administrative admonishment and keeping him from having a witness as a representative violated the integrity of the investigation. He said, look, you can't point to anything that shows that it violates the integrity of the investigation. And we did submit evidence below. There was a declaration and the citation to a treatise. But I'd also cite to all the Pobar cases, the City of Pasadena case, the Orange County, the LA Deputy Sheriff's case, Upland, Ellis, Ellens, and the Gaines case. All of those are revolving around restrictions regarding police interrogations or investigations into police misconduct and anti-huddling rules preventing witnesses from talking to each other, and they're all designed to increase the integrity of the case or of the investigation. And this was also raised in the Fraternal Order of Police case, which cites to the City of Auburn v. Black case, where that course states, quote, it appears to the court perfectly reasonable during an internal investigation to limit the access of the employee being investigated to the witnesses in the investigation in order to ensure that the investigation results in the most accurate and complete conclusion possible. And then they found that the argument that such admonishment violates the free speech is frivolous. And I would say in this day and age when investigations into police misconduct are in the news on a day-to-day basis, it's so important that law enforcement agencies protect the integrity of these investigations. I can only imagine if it hit the press that, you know, somebody, a special agent who is engaged of serious police misconduct is allowed to meet with a witness prior to either one of them's interrogation. before the law enforcement agency investigating that complaint. That is going to erode the public confidence in these investigations, and I think we do need to ensure that integrity. And again, going back to the merits, if you look at the Gates case, it's directly on point. I know counsel tried to distinguish the case in her brief that it had to do, it was an undercover case, but that really is a difference without, or a distinction without a difference, and it regarded police corruption. But again, this case regards serious police misconduct. There just is no difference. And then I would finally just like to go to the qualified immunity argument that was raised in the court below but not ruled on by the district judge. And then if you look at the Fraternal Order of Police case, it clearly applies qualified immunity. It was not clearly established, it is not clearly established, that giving an administrative admonishment to a witness and not letting them confer with other witnesses prior to their interviews violates.
You're talking about qualified immunity, but there's no claim for damages in this case, is there?
Not with regard to 1983.
So I don't understand why you're talking about qualified immunity.
Okay. There was some confusion at the beginning of the case with regard to how the complaint was set forth. At the end of the complaint, there was a request, and there was the relief stated for each claim, and under the 1983
claim, she clarified in her reply brief that there's no reason for the state to be talking about qualified immunity, so I'm confused why you're still talking about it.
And finally, I actually, since I have time, under the POBR cause of action, appellant's counsel refers to the Ellens case and the discussion of the word implicated. And in that case, witnesses who were implicated could not represent or confer with other witnesses. And the appellant likens the word implicated to subject to the investigation or subject of. And I would just point out that the term implicated is much more broad. It is more like subject to rather than subject of. The subject of an investigation has a very particular meaning. You're the subject. You get a subject letter. You get particular rights under the Peace Officer Bill of Rights. But being subject to just means that you're a recipient witness, just like being implicated. You were involved in the situation. Unless there's any further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Very briefly, Your Honors. With respect to the cases that counsel cited regarding the limitations on representation under POBAR, those are based on the specific underlying facts of the investigation. For example, in the ALADS case, the anti-huddling case, that was in the immediate aftermath of a deputy-involved shooting, and the court noted that that was the crucial time period where the witnesses couldn't talk to each other, but they were free to talk after if the administrative proceedings continued further down that line. Gates involved an investigation of criminal corruption among the police officers.
Pasadena police officers case from the California Supreme Court.
Pasadena police officers involved the right to pre-interrogation discovery, not representation issues or blanket prohibition issues. There's a lot of general language.
Don't we need to follow the general language to think about what the California Supreme Court would say in response to this question?
Yes, as a guideline, but not as a mandate. And there's also other language regarding the purpose of POBAR, and I believe it is also from the California Supreme Court. It's County of Riverside versus Superior Court, protecting peace officers from unfair attacks on character, unfair or wholly fabricated allegations of misconduct. That is one of the purposes of the procedural protections of POBAR, and of course the constitutional rights as well. And that brings me back to Pickering and the issue of standing. Now, with respect to Pickering, we also, within our First Amendment claim, we also have a freedom of association claim, and so of course the addressing matters of public concern would not apply there.
And your freedom of association claim is that you have a right to associate with the representative of your choice.
That is correct.
And what case is your best case for that proposition?
you know, the best case, there's nothing that is as on point as we would like it to be. But certainly the Mothershed case and about the right to be free from state interference in consulting with legal counsel, and then the Brotherhood of R.R. Drayman versus Virginia, the United States Supreme Court case, about the importance of a union being able to consult with a representative. Again, it's more of the general principles that we've talked about, but the way that this case went down is that Mr. Barcelona was noticed for the investigation. He had, he then was told subsequently, he was told he could not talk to witnesses, was not told who those witnesses even were, so the department was exposing him to allegations, more allegations he was having.
And in the incident, that was an issue, so we would have known who was there.
Yes and no, Your Honor. There was a meeting that the allegations were not that Mr. Barcelona made threatening comments to the complainant. The record reflects he didn't even know the complainant. The allegations were that threatening comments were made on his behalf. So how Mr. Barcelona was not quite sure how everything got from point A to point B with respect to the allegations against him. It was a broader universe. And very briefly, I just want to point that counsel raised the National Order of Police, which is a D.C. Circuit case, which had to do with standing. And that case focused on the admonition was the exact same thing. They could not talk about the investigation. These were uniformed Secret Service agents. And the court focused on the chilling effect of the prior restraint, not whether the speech was concretely a matter of public concern, but it would chill the speech and prevent the officers from discussing things with one another that might be relevant and might involve the terms and conditions of their employment. Their biggest problem with the state's actions in this case is they took a unilateral action. It was entirely overbroad. They offered no reasons specific to the facts, the underlying facts of the allegations against Mr. Barcelona, and there was no method to challenge it.